Good morning and welcome to the Saturday Morning Storytellers edition here of The Crude Life. We've got Joe and Kelly with us here. They're Watford City residents. Is that a correct way to say it? And, you know, that business is based out of here. And so,
yeah.
Boy, I'm actually sitting too far apart. I might come a little bit closer as we do the interview here. But how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good.
Kelly Kester.
Yes, sir.
And Joe Steele.
Yes.
Joe Steele, where are you from?
I was born in Texas, moved to California when I was about 5'6", and lived there up until 2014.
What part of California?
A little town called Tehachapi. It's a couple miles north of Los Angeles.
Okay. I was Huntington Beach, lived on Brookhurst. Okay. We went across the street. We were in Newport.
Yeah.
So we spent all of our time in Newport and biked down to Baja and had some fun there, did some magazines in Northern California. Very familiar with California, so we probably talk about California's energy in a minute or two. But
just before we moved up here, we lived in just south of Ventura for 2 years.
Oh, Ventura. You know, that was one of my first experiences with smog, was on the Ventura Boulevard. I was interviewing in Burbank, California, for one of the production companies that worked on the Leno show. Jay Leno show, sorry, for the kids out there that probably read about Jay Leno in history class. I was driving down the Ventura Boulevard, and there was a mountain next to me, and I couldn't see it because of smog. And so I often cite that California, one of the things they did right when it comes to policy and regulation is whatever they did for the emission standards, they were a leader in that, and no question about it. And, of course, before we get on here, one of the ways that they are not a leader is with the EV vehicles and some of the forcing the marketplace, but we don't want to get too deep into that here on the Saturday Morning Storytellers. So you're based out of Sydney, Montana, is that right?
The company is based in Sydney, but I manage the yard here in Watford City.
Okay, we're at in Sydney. We've got radio affiliates in Sydney, so.
Okay.
That's great. Okay, and I see a satellite office here in Watford City, so. Hot oil driving. Let's talk about that a little bit. One of my first interviews was with a hot oil driver, and he was on the road so long during $80 to $100 oil, he hadn't had a salad for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
So much fast food and gas station. So hungry I could eat a gas station sandwich, you know?
Yeah.
Well, talk about being a hot oil driver.
Well, it's a lot of fun. It's probably the most favorite job I've ever had. You know, I get to play with the big, you know, fire all day long, so it's a lot of fun. And going out for work over rigs, you know, hanging out with crews here and there, it's a lot of fun. I like it a lot.
How about the transition from California to the upper Midwest here, as we actually Rocky Mountain upper Midwest?
You know, it really wasn't much of a stretch for me. You know, a lot of people complain about the prices of, you know, food and goods here, and we're from California, so everything was expensive anyway. And then, like I said, at the beach for 2 years, you know, everything was expensive. Mm-hmm. Unless you could find the farm stands. Like, I miss those.
I was going to say, the two things that I actually say that I miss about California when I spent my very limited time out there is fresh salads and the seafood. It's just not even comparable. And if you've ever had a California salad, like you've been to the roadside stands of just strawberries. Oh, so good. Anyway. So,
yeah, they're
sorry.
Great.
And it's not to disparage anything around here, but, man, it's just something about it out there.
Yeah.
And your company, Elite, talk about that a little bit.
They started in 2013, I think, with just a couple of trucks, and we've grown to just under 20 now. And we're still trying to grow, trying to get our market share here in Watford City. You know, hot oil is a pretty tough market. There's a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of small companies trying to grow. And they're all competing, so sometimes it gets rough. You know, a lot of fighting and underbidding on price. So.
There's a lot, aren't they? A lot of independents, but they basically have one master, right? They basically work for one company. It's hard to have five rigs or whatever.
It might be. We're all fighting to work for the same few big companies here. You know, XTO.
Yeah, Conoco. And that becomes hard when the prices go up and down because you know those are the ones that can adjust the pricing the quickest. And and so they're usually the first ones to adjust to the marketplace. And oil companies, if you're listening, reward them. Be the first ones to reward them because they adjust first out there. So, all right, let's transition over to. Sorry, that was a little public service announcement there. Planet service announcement, we call it here at the Crude Life. So, Kelly Kester,
Yes, sir.
You're from Alaska?
Originally, yes. I was born and raised there. I lived there until I was about 23, then moved down to the Idaho and then been in North Dakota for the last 10 years now.
That's quite a change.
North Dakota and Alaska aren't too much different. You know?
In what way? Everything's bigger in Alaska, isn't it? True. I mean, the mosquitoes are five times as big.
Yeah, they're a lot more aggressive here.
And aggressive. Yeah. Here they're aggressive, oh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, weather patterns, you know, a lot of industries are the same, mining, you know, oil, gas, things like that, military. So, a lot of the same types of people as well, you know, just down-to-earth people that want to do good for the community and work hard.
And you're in western North Dakota, too, so you've got that natural landscape that when you step outside for a smoke break or a coffee break or whatever they're called now, you got a little bit of nature you can look at. Where I'm from in Fargo, we don't have any of that.
No.
It's just all flatness and buildings and wheat.
Oh, yeah.
If you're lucky, you get wheat, you know, that type of thing. So the other thing about Alaska that I found interesting was that the government, you know, they own the oil. So the people own the oil.
Yep.
And because of that, they essentially only work with two companies.
Yep, native corporations. And
yeah, there's like BP and Shell, right?
Those ConocoPhillips is
on
North Slope.
Okay. Yep. And it's basically because things take so long to pass through government that it just works easier just to have one or two, three companies, and that's it. And
Just logistically up there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really only two oil plays up there is, you know, the Prudhoe Bay area and then down around the sounds down by Anchorage down there. Having only two markets and really minimal access to get to those, it really limits the players in it.
How do the locals deal with the oil and gas activity? Are they still accepting of it?
I mean, it's like anywhere else. You have the people that are for it and people that are against it. You know,
so. I always wonder in those more of, you know, the mountainous states, you know, like Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, even I guess Washington State to a certain degree. So. Awesome. So, okay, so you're living in Watford City, are you?
Nope, I live in Belfield.
Belfield.
Yep.
No kidding. Down, the southern tier of the Bakken.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, look at you.
Yep.
So it's the Dickinson.
Yeah.
Meridian Energy putting in the Davis Refinery there. So that should be some exciting stuff for Belfield. That's going to add a number of jobs to the entire community. So talk about living in Belfield a little bit and what you guys do down there.
I like it. It's a smaller community. You know, I mean, I always use the example that the post lady will send my wife a message when we're out of town and let us know that we have mail or where it's at. It's just very small community, a lot of great people there. So,
how about your company, eServices?
Yes, sir. We've been in business about 7 years. In the last year, we've expanded. So eServices started out with just a single hotshot as the owner ran that and then slowly grew up to about six hot shots. Then in about June, July of last year, we acquired Winch Trucks, and that's when I came aboard. And so now we're up to Winch hot shots and rentals. So we have eight Winch Trucks, eight hot shots, and then a rental fleet as well.
And E, what does that stand for? Does anybody ask?
That's the owner's first name, Eric.
Oh, okay. Yep. So it's not energy. It's not environmental.
Nope.
Okay. It's just you get a piggyback off those fine letter buzzwords. Absolutely. So, okay. All right. Are you guys into that ESG? Are you following that at all at this point?
Oh, yeah, I've been hearing about it.
Yeah, have you? Okay.
Yeah, it sounds terrible.
You know, and the way we describe it to people is that it's we're on the one-yard line, got 99 yards to go, we're in the first quarter, and the refs haven't even brought the rules yet.
Yep.
But the game has started.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it happened or what happened, but it's the truth.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you take a look at some of the political stuff out there, they're already talking about SEC having the rules by the end of 2022. And at that point, we're, you know, talking ESG score.
Yeah.
And actually, you can Google your own company, and you probably have an ESG score out there right now. Anybody listening, go do it.
Yep.
I did a presentation. We had a conference on Thursday here in Watford City. It was a Work Hard, Play Hard conference, and part of it was the ESG University. And one of the people in the audience, we Googled their company name through an ESG rating company, and they got 25. And their eyes got huge because they didn't realize that was public.
Wow.
And I explained to them that this is not even a score that's even criteria by anybody but that website.
Yep.
I said, unfortunately, so that's what we're up against right now, is that the game has already started, guys. So we got to help set the narrative. We got to help get our voices out there and heard and that kind of stuff. So I do implore people to educate themselves on the ESG movement, because it is here, and the oil and gas industry actually could be a leader in it. Yep. Very easily, because nobody knows uncertain times better than the oil and gas industry. I mean, you're talking about ups and downs of marketplaces and all kinds of different things. So, California, their energy. We talked a little bit about how I believe that there's a representation of the national economy going on, where California mandated 2% of the vehicles become EV in 1992 or three, and then 1999, 10% of the vehicles. And that totally changed the whole marketplace, brought in new subsidies, federal subsidies that didn't exist before. Energy companies had to switch their fleet vehicles and figure things out and hire new people that had to write government grants. And I mean, just the impact goes on and on and on. So you're from California. I don't know how much you paid attention to it, how much you're involved with it, but are you following me with my example on how they kind of forcing the economy to accept EV vehicles regardless?
Yeah, I understand that, but you know, in the 90s, I was still just a kid. You know, yeah. 92, I was six. So that portion I didn't, but like the example I brought up before the show was in, you know, the mid to late 2000s, when oil was over $100 a barrel and gas prices were, you know, $5 plus a gallon. I remember at that time I was paying attention to government, and they brought in a lot of subsidies for, you know, windmill or wind turbines and solar. And I remember seeing them, because in Tehachapi there's a lot of wind turbines, and they just started popping up. And then solar plants, same thing, just popping up out of nowhere. And then I also remember a lot of them not doing anything. There was no infrastructure to support the power they're producing. Or in some cases, my theory, I don't know this for sure, they just got that government money, did a little bit, and then just, oh, we're bankrupt, and just took off. So I don't think the government trying to drive something one way or the other is going to really benefit anything. Probably make it worse, in my opinion, but because I saw it, you know, right there. Because
right before your eyes.
Yeah, because one of the big industries in Tehachapi is there's the prison or there's wind, and that was pretty much it. Or people commuting from L.A., which is starting to be more of the case because it's so hard to find anything reasonable to buy or rent down there. So people are like, well, I could just commute, buy a fuel-efficient vehicle, and commute 2 hours a day. I'm going to save money. So like I said, I don't think it'll work out in the long run. You know, just cost a lot of money, and a lot of people get some money and just disappear.
What I'd like to see, and I've been saying this for almost 5 years now, is that just take 50% of the subsidies they've given to wind and solar. And here's why. In 30 years, they haven't hit any of their milestones.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's not like we're taking it away from them. We can't keep enabling bad business, bad behavior, right? So let's just take away 50% of it, not even all of it, just 50% of it. And what if you gave it to natural gas? You got these crazy guys out there mining Bitcoin at the well sites, sleeping, checking monitors. You got other guys trying to figure out new super plastics and how to take pentane and turn it into butane and wrap it around a car and all kinds of different things. So I swear that you could probably have a swimming pool in your backyard for $1,000 made out of super plastic in a year if you did these types of subsidy shifts. And I'm a libertarian at the core that doesn't believe in subsidies. So I'm even conceding by saying, well, as long as we're doing it, what about this?
Yeah.
So, you know, Kelly, talk to me a little bit about, you know, would your business be better off if you got $100,000 from the government?
Absolutely. I mean, there's always improvements, you know, and while we're on that topic, you know, I mean, there's always room for efficiency improvements, you know, such like our rental fleet. You know, we've actually looked into like a hybrid light tower. So it's still a diesel generator, but it has a battery power where the diesel charges the battery and run the lights off the battery. So it conserves fuel and produces the same amount of, you know, light. But to purchase those over a conventional light tower is nearly triple the price. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're truly wanting to better the environment, put in the subsidies into the areas that actually can use them.
You know, it's interesting, too, because wind turbines, they're not recyclable at this point. We haven't figured out a way to actually de-engineer them, if you will, you know, strip them apart so we can recycle them. They're just stacking up in South Dakota and Iowa and other states, and yet we haven't put money towards the recycling of water. Like, that's a huge oil and gas part of the business, that if you gave subsidies to these recycling water companies or these hot oil companies, I don't know what your whole recycling of hot oil, if you guys even can do that or what. I don't know that side of the business, so, but I'm sure there's way. I tell you what, could you make your life more environmental with $100,000?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. That's how I should have just said the question. Basically, you know, instead of creating devices that are not good for the environment, okay, because a wind turbine, I'm not even talking about whether the science is there, the killing of bald eagles, the insects, all that stuff. I'm just even talking about the recycling part. If we can't even figure out the end goal of our intention, we got problems. So anyway, how can your industry be a little more environmental, by the way? Because that's interesting. Well,
at one point, I remember there was a company up here that they were trying to get. They came up with a way to purify the produced water back to basically fresh, non-potable water. I don't know what happened to that guy or where he went, but I remember there was a show on National Geographic or something called Boomtowners.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever watched that one. But
I just remember the name.
It was a pretty good show, but he was marketing in there, and I remember him selling it to a few different companies. I think he was based in Alexander, actually. But I always thought that was a great idea, and that would be something the government could throw some money at, because there's, you know, millions of barrels of water a day just getting pumped down. And my theory is it comes back eventually. Somewhere it finds some cracks, purifies itself, ends up in some deep water reservoir somewhere. But that's just my theory. But I'm not a geologist by any means, but wouldn't it? It's got to.
Well, I think there's a shale play profit moment. This is when I get up on my oil drum and I see salt water becoming a problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that is going to be,
because
the oil and gas industry is going to be on the defense probably in the next quarter over salt water recycling.
Because if they could use it and use it, that produced water, for fracking, for instance, they'd basically just be recycling their own water. And I remember Conoco in like 2015 or so, somewhere around there, was experimenting with fracking with production water, which it worked. As far as I know, it worked pretty well. But the water coming back was about twice as heavy as it would have been in the first place, because it was already carrying salt, and now it picks up more salt. So it made another demon they had to deal with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think there's going to be big business in the salt water business, a recycling business. I really do, just because of just the way it goes. I mean, I remember when they came out, when the Bakken first came out in the Permian too, they realized they needed 10 to 20 times more water than they thought, and that was just a blip in the news. I was like, whoa, okay, that should probably be remembered, that sort of thing. And so that's why I do think, at the time, this is going to probably be the next thing. So you guys are obviously solutions to problems out there in the oil fields, correct?
Sometimes.
I like to talk about what solution, if are you a problem solver, are you, that type of thing. So, e-services, which Eric services, hotshot drivers, what kind of problems do you guys solve for the operators and companies? Who's your customer, by the way?
So we work for the big players, Marathon, Conoco, Continental, Bruin, Enerplus, those.
Okay.
So, logistics is the problem we solve all the time, So strategically placing trucks and people in areas that, cut down that travel time for our customers and make it more convenient when they need something, ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the only solution on the hot side that you can solve for your customers. Just be there as fast as you can and give them the best service you can while giving them the best rate you can.
Yeah, build a better mousetrap,
Exactly.
That type of thing. So that's just great.
But, the problem we struggle with and everybody else in the nation right now is the shortage of CDL drivers and quality CDL drivers, And unfortunately, any Joe Schmo can go to a CDL school and be done in, 3 weeks. Doesn't mean he's really a talented individual with a CDL. So finding people that are eager to be part of that team is definitely a challenge.
So CDL drivers, that's another Planet Service announcement that you could probably get hired yesterday if you get your license. And you can probably pick your state too, actually, because this is a message I'm hearing from any town USA and almost any industry too. It's kind of that way. So How about you, Joe? Who's your customer and how can you help them out?
Well, same thing. We work for a lot of the smaller companies that nobody's ever heard of, but we work for, we just work for Conoco, XTO, Whiting, but you know, same thing. We keep their wells running. A lot of, I like to call it preventative maintenance, the schedule work stuff where we're just pumping water or oil down with some chemicals, keep everything running well. And it's my firm belief that you put a little bit of hot, fresh water down every well, they're going to run a lot better for a lot longer, you know, a lot less downtime with things wearing out, downhole pumps, tubing, you know, because it's just moving parts down there and they're going to wear out. But if you're putting some fresh water and some chemicals to coat everything really well, I think they run a lot better for a lot longer. And same thing with us, you know, CDL drivers are hard to come by. And with our job, it's a lot more complex, a lot of moving parts, a lot of danger. You're messing with heat and sometimes with oil. And oil and heat is really very touchy. So if you're not on your game and paying attention, you're going to create a bomb, which, you know, we don't have anybody around that's not paying attention, especially when you're playing with oil. Like fresh water, you know, you can kind of, you know, put yourself on cruise control. But if you're playing with oil, you've mm-hmm. got to be paying attention to what's going on. So
how can people get in touch with you and give you some business?
Yeah, that'd be great.
How can they reach you?
I believe we do have a website, and
you do work in oil and gas. You guys are so busy, you don't even know half the time. I love it.
Yeah,
people are always like LinkedIn or Facebook. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I don't think we're on a lot of social media. I think we should push that a little bit. You know,
that's all right. We'll make sure we get the links up on our website, your phone number, and all kinds of stuff. So. How about you, Kelly?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a Facebook page. You can reach out and apply online there. So eServices LLC on Facebook. And then submit an application there or even send us a message anytime if you have any questions about any openings we have. Currently, we're kind of looking to grow in the Watford City area. So we're looking to add 2 hot shots and potentially 3 winch truck drivers.
All right. Well, we'll make sure we have the links on our website. Thank you, guys, for coming by this morning.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.